recording? Let's get some stuff recorded.
Fucking hell.
Yeah?
Yes,
we're so you don't want to sit on the little chair then? I think it'd be hilarious. The little podcast chair.
The listeners.
Well, we were just talking about parents' evening.
Is this on? Yeah. Oh, we're recording now.
Yeah, yeah. We were just talking about parents' evening and how hilarious it would look for Mark Goddard to sit on. This was a great investment. It's like 10 quid from IKEA. I don't even know why I bought it.
Well, you know, I was just going to say, because I know you ain't got kids. And I'm wondering, like, well, what's it here for? Is it for Missy? Of course it is.
I had it in the corner of my bedroom in my apartment with a plant on it.
Right, okay.
And I thought it looked quite stylish, but now it's here. It just kind of floats.
He's there with a big boy chair and a pelican bib.
Welcome to Listen. We've finally got back together and got the camera rolling again. Lots to talk about this time. Requested by Mark. This is why he's showed up at my house. The Raptors have been called emergency convene. We've got to talk about some stuff. So where do you want to start? How are you, first of all?
Good, mate.
Yeah? When was the last time we did a listen? Was it last year?
Yeah.
How was your Christmas?
Good.
Did Santa bring everything you wanted?
Yeah. But when we were in Vegas, remember, okay, the plan was...
Yes. The plan was to do a listen then. Then we ended up watching fights and talking about old days.
Yeah. We were going to do it there, and then we got to the house, and then we just thought... best laid plans and all that.
Yeah, we had a good conversation though, and at the end of it we did go, we should have recorded that.
Yeah,
it was old days.
The cat and the sock, that one, that was it.
Cat and the sock.
That was there.
Cat and the sock.
Move on.
Oh, the sock over the, yeah.
Yeah. I was trying to talk about somebody evading us, like, you know, if a cat gets something on its head.
Yeah.
I don't know why I said sock, but I could have said I can hear him laughing in the background. You fuck off. The box, you know, have you ever seen a cat with like, or it goes in a crisp packet? You never seen that? Yeah. And then it like tries to pull its head back into its... That's nothing to do with what we're talking about.
What do you want to talk about then? Where do you want to start? Where do you want to start? Because you're all kinds of aggro. You came in on fire today and you're like...
I know. Imagine getting...
Imagine
getting the conversation. Wouldn't they love that? No,
I'm glad the camera wasn't rolling when you first came in.
The conversation off it now, but I'm just, it's the same thing. You know, we were talking about with, obviously judging was in the news, as it not normally is, but a big pay-per-view at the weekend and last weekend just gone with the John Jones and Reyes fight. And I was speaking to Ariel this week and that we were discussing about, because, like, you know, is often the case after a big pay-per-view, it was a close, and this is the thing I was talking about, busting those misconceptions. So hopefully this is two methods for people. One is to go and listen to the podcast I've done with Ariel on his ESPN show, and obviously what we talk about today. And yeah, it was, you know, that Reyes fight, and I told, you know, I said to you, Ariel asked me the same thing. Well, how did you score it? I said, I didn't watch the whole fight. So it's unnecessary. It's not fair of me to give a 5-round opinion because I didn't watch the full 5. I think I turned it off after a minute in the 4th round.
Right.
But like the reason we're talking, and it was the same reason I said to him, was because it's not necessarily about the specific fight or fighters, you know, being an official and stuff. I have to be mindful, etc. But I can still give an opinion. It's more to do with the discussion was led on same misconceptions, same thing that people think is the answer, or people think is the way to score fights. And then everybody going berserk after the, you know, because look, it was a close fight. That's the thing. So the first thing was talking about was when people were saying you can't use the word robbery. You know, he was robbed. No, no, no. A robbery is, you know, it's a criminal offense by definition.
Yes.
And when you attribute that to a fight, if you have a 3 or a 5-round fight and you know for sure, you know, Ray Charles can tell you who won that fight, and then the scorecards come in and it goes completely the other way. That's a robbery. And a lot of the times people also lose sight of that, because a robbery means A, your bet didn't come in, or the person who you were supporting didn't win.
Yeah.
You know, when you have a super close fight, and I mean really close, that's why sometimes you'll get a 30-27, 27-30. People look at the end, you know, the net result, the end result of, in this case, a scorecard, but don't divulge or don't dissect it enough to see how it could possibly have got to that.
Mm-hmm. But you said that four rounds to Jones wasn't that. I mean, the way I scored it, I had it. I've watched the fight twice. I had it three rounds. I had the first three rounds to Reyes.
Yeah.
And then his pace dropped off, and John Jones took over in the last two rounds.
Mm-hmm.
But like I agree, it wasn't a robbery. I mean, because two of the three rounds I scored to Reyes were close rounds.
And there you go. And that's what happened on the official scorecard. Mm-hmm. Obviously, one of the judges, Joe Solis, gave 4-1. And obviously, on paper, everybody started going berserk. But the round that was in question, I think, was the second round. One of the other judges, he was actually in the majority. Marcus Rosales gave that round to John Jones too,
right.
You know? And this is the thing that people... Look, it's the same in any sport. I'll try to explain it to Ariel too. You know, on paper, how it looks on paper is not, you know, like me and you are talking now and we say, oh, did you see such and such fight? No, I didn't. What was it? Oh, I went to decision. Oh, unanimous. Yeah, he lost all the rounds. Oh, well, people listening to that, or you may have an image in your mind thinking, oh, he got whitewashed. No.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been five of the closest rounds on record,
mm-hmm.
but the net result is 50-45.
Yeah.
He lost all the rounds, unanimous decision, all of this. Not until you would actually go back, look, watch and analyse the fight would you say, God damn, that's nip and tuck,
mm-hmm.
you know? And yeah. that's the problem we have. And obviously my discussion, the same as what we do with the, when I teach the officials, and you've been there, you know, you've been party to it, is obviously it's the misconceptions. That's the biggest, one of the big, I said it in Ariel, to my tweets, misconception dogs this sport in milestone fashion.
Yeah.
Dogs it.
So, but you don't necessarily need to think we need to change the scoring criteria. We need to educate the people that are doing the scoring. You had a good analogy earlier before we started rolling, so I'm not going to steal it from you. You say it.
Yeah, obviously... You know, and this is where people go wrong, because like Joe Rogan, for instance, Joe Rogan has the biggest footprint, one of the biggest media footprints in this sport. Been a commentator for what, 20 years? Maybe 20 years plus.
Almost, yeah.
His podcast alone is listened to by millions, mm-hmm. not millions. Mm-hmm. But Joe was, okay, he's vocal and he's passionate about being vocal. But it's always the same thing that comes out, you know, and I said the same to Ariel, you know, I'm always there open for discussion. It's a 10-point must system. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. That's absolute bollocks. Okay. The 10-point must system is as, like I explained with Ariel, it's a secondary action, you know, it's a system that's sat there waiting to be told what to do at the end of any given round. And the way that I'll articulate it is that, let's say it wasn't a 10-point must system. Let's say it was a 50-point, 100-point, a half point. Call it what you want. That sits there and is waiting to be told what to do by a judge at the end of a round.
Mm-hmm.
If you and me watch a round of fighting and see it in a different way, the points in which we will attribute or give to a fighter will be different.
Of course, yeah.
And that's why I try and pull it back and say all the focus, the education and the understanding goes on to the criteria.
Mm-hmm.
The criteria, we have a very detailed and specific set of criteria for judges to utilize and analyze to pick. Obviously, people will see at the beginning of a broadcast, I said the same to Ariel. You'll see a flash up on the screen, a graphic. Fights are scored by effective striking, grappling, aggression, octagon control.
In that order.
Yeah, and you can't blame that. So people will see this and you can't blame the layman for thinking, oh, well, obviously they won't understand what that means fully, but they'll try and apply it in their own fashion. So they'll see aggression, octagon control. They don't realise that the secondary and tertiary, the second and third points of criteria are only ever there to help you as a judge if the round is super, super close. Yeah. If it's not... if it's not, you know, like I said, effective striking and or grappling, the reason it's and or is pretty obvious because some rounds of fighting will play out like a boxing or a kickboxing match. There is no grappling. Some will be completely different. Very little striking, a lot of wrestling and you know, on the mat grappling.
So quick question on that then. Striking, grappling, the next one down is
aggression.
Aggression and octagon control.
Yeah.
But they always say in that order. So does that mean that striking scored higher than grappling, or is that striking and or striking?
Point
and
one.
Then we go aggression.
Point one.
Control.
Effective striking and grappling. Or grappling. Okay. They carry equal weight. It depends on how, like I said, it's which area of that, which of those two was the significant factor in a round. If me and you stand in kickbox for 5 minutes, it's even easier.
Yeah.
Grappling, boom, out the window. Yeah. One less thing I have to worry about. If me and you are locking horns and throwing each other all over the mat and embracing a jiu-jitsu battle, then we may have a little bit of striking, but that's the primary factor. 60, 70, 80% of the round may have took place on the mat.
Yeah.
So that is the factor that we will consider first. That's why it has equal standing and equal weight.
So then... My issue then comes with the people interpreting what is effective striking and grappling.
Correct. Correct, Dan right. Hardy.
Because, like, and I always, like, I put a tweet out the day that found its way back to me on Instagram. I was talking about octagon control. Like, people always talk about octagon control, and there's this perspective.
Throw it away.
Yeah, but there's this perspective that octagon control is you're the one that's got the center behind you. You're the one that's pushing them up against the fence.
Mm-hmm.
My argument is that if you're the one that's aggressing, but you're walking onto shots and not being effective, you're not controlling the octagon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is where Lyoto Machida was so good. He controlled the octagon so well, but he allowed you to come to him. Like I expect Jan to do this weekend.
Yeah, counter striking.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Go on.
Sorry, no.
No, but it's the same thing with effective grappling. Like, I would argue that John Jones scored 2 of 9 takedowns. In the last two rounds.
Yeah.
The last two rounds, last three rounds? Last two, I think. But he never was able to hold him down, control him, and do anything with it. So I wouldn't say that was effective grappling.
And that's a very balanced and articulated reasoning and an argument to have. And this is like I said about me and Ariel. I keep saying me and Ariel. We're touching on it.
Make like, me jealous, Mark. I mean,
sorry, mate.
Is like, it because I'm not making myself available enough?
When I was saying back about the 10-point must system, stop throwing the shade at the system. Forget it. Look, you leave whichever points, however you want to reward that fighter, leave it there. Because the main primary focus is what happens before that. That's an innocent party that just sits there waiting to go, well, you told me to give these points. That 5-minute window of fighting, okay? This is where all the action takes place. This is where all the understanding and all the... This is where you really delve down deep into it, you know? People that are saying it's 10-point must, we borrowed it from boxing. Yeah, we shared it. Boxing has its own criteria too.
Mm.
It's exactly the same for boxing, you know? It's a secondary act and we need to take the focus back to the primary act. And that is... And look, I'm not saying that... And like I said, I had a series of tweets where I'm not saying that the current scoring system, i.e. criteria, shouldn't be under review. No, I'm not saying that. The open scoring, all that, hell no. And we can discuss that in a minute. I'm not saying we should be looking to get better. We should be discussing. We should be having open forums and conversation. But let's not make it so radical. There's far easier, more pragmatic things to do. And the analogy that I give to you is it's when you have sometimes, like on the regional shows or guys that are coming up with judges that aren't experienced, etc. It's not the car that's broken. It's the fucking driver. If I go to a Formula One car, okay, and I get in the exact same car as Lewis Hamilton.
You won't fit in that car.
Right? They motherfucker. I get in a big Formula One
like
car.
Like Mario Kart, can you imagine? You'd okay. have to sit on top.
Yeah, like this. We're back to the mini. Chairs again. But one, oh god, oh, looks like Donkey Kong. In the So listen, we go back to the analogy. Yes. Okay, I get a bigger Formula One car than because I'm twice the size of Lewis Hamilton, but he sits alongside me. I have the exact same spec and performance of the car.
Yeah, yeah.
He's going to glide the car around effortlessly. Mm-hmm. I'm going to look like a fucking stuttering, stalling freak. And I can't get the car around, but I've got exactly the same tools
yes.
at my disposal. Uh-huh. Exactly. So it's not the car, it's the person who's driving.
Yes.
We're both equipped with the same tools, the same methods. Call it what you want, but we can't apply it in the same way.
No. So are the driving tests for these motherfuckers then?
Which ones?
The people that are sitting in these chairs making these, like who's qualifying them?
And here's the thing I was saying about, you know, with, and I said the same point to Ariel about, you know, we're still a young sport. You've heard me talk about that before. So when you get, you go to some areas or some countries, etc., you may get what's known as the old guard or guys who are not completely and utterly well-versed in MMA. Mm-hmm. They may think they are, but even in a subliminal fashion, you know, they may be pushing down to one particular area. Mm-hmm. They don't mean to. They may not want to.
No, it's entirely subconscious a lot of the time because they're programmed to watch what they've been watching for years. Like that dusty fuck I was talking about on the podcast the other day.
The what?
Dusty fuck. I won't mention his name. Dusty fuck? I just call him Dusty Fuck now.
Do I know him?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh.
Yeah. I'll tell you after the podcast.
Okay.
He's a dusty fuck, though.
Oh, okay. So that's what I'm saying, like going back to saying with Joe Rogan, he's such an influence, mm-hmm. such an influencer. And look, and he does talk to, he obviously cares about the sport, passionate about the sport. But just, I said to him before, you know, it's time and stuff. And he does talk to other referees and officials. Of course he does. But I'd change it. I'd love to sit down and have a cup of coffee with him because I'd change his thinking. Mm. I'm trying to do the same to Ariel as well. And again, change his thinking on, don't focus too much on this radically trying to change the scoring system. What we radically have to do is make sure that the three people sat in the chairs are fully versed and educated and up to date and capable of giving the fighters the best possible chance. That's what it's about,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Giving the fighters, and this is not about any judge specifically, even like I said, you look at the Jones Reyes card and one judge in particular, you know, I know what online abuse is like, you know, that's the second half of it. I know what it's like.
Yeah.
Trust me, I'm talking directly from experience, but it's unfair to single out, you know, like I said, not that because on the lower levels and stuff, listen, I've cussed out enough officials and judges, as you know.
I've watched you do it octagon side while the fights have been going on.
Correct.
It's been great.
You know, I ain't no shrinking vibe. Why? Because I care deeply for the sport. I want the best for the sport. Mm. I just wish that we, you know, a lot of big influencers could get together and work closer to, and like we said, open discussion and forums and looking at things and discussing things is the way forward.
Yeah.
But not when we have something, I said, listen, it's an educational thing. And I mean it in the most, you know, non-condescending, you know, the truest way.
Mm-hmm. I know it'd be kind of a rough transition, especially for the current judges. But like, say that the judge on Saturday night, the same judge that scored three rounds to Andre Ewell in the second fight was...
Didn't watch that fight.
Right. That was... I don't know how you saw three rounds to Andre Ewell. I just don't. I have two clear memories of him being kicked in the body.
And I'm not sitting on the fence then.
No.
But I'm a professional, like I said, people need to understand and respect. I'm not here to throw people under the bus, etc. But
no.
So the fight you said was who?
Andre Ewell against... I can't remember his name.
Went the distance.
Yeah, went the distance.
Was it a close fight?
I mean, yes, it was a close fight. It was a close fight. But I don't see... But like you said, you know, someone can get dominated every round and win 30-27, but every round can still be close, but they win every round.
But that's not what you just said. You said somebody could get dominated every round and still win 30-27.
No, sorry. We were talking earlier about if somebody's not watched the fight and you go, oh, yeah, they lost every round 30-27.
Oh, you mean looking at it on paper?
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry,
on paper.
I thought you meant as in scoring live.
But the judging just didn't reflect the fight.
Okay.
Is it Hernandez? What's the kid's name? Look it up for me. The kid that fought Andre Yule.
But he
controlled the center. He had more effective striking. He hurt him to the body bad two times in the fight. Mm-hmm. And this is where I feel like the judges struggle to judge what effective striking is sometimes, especially if they've got a boxing mentality. Because like if they're dusty old fucks that have only watched boxing for 40 years and now MMA's on their radar in the last 10.
Tell me what effective striking means.
Hitting your opponent more effectively, being, you know, causing more damage, causing more effect to
correct
them.
And that's the thing you got there.
And taking less yourself.
When I was saying that, look, in a pragmatic way, like I said, if we look at the, you know, we could quote verbatim on effective striking. Basically, effective legal strikes landed.
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. And then while I, as a judge, my job is then to assess the effectiveness or slash impact. The training word is damage, but we don't write that down because it's in, you know, it's not a good word to use. So we use the word impact is a byproduct of effect. If I punch you square in the mouth, you know, I'm going to cause a certain amount of damage.
Yeah.
That's the job of the judge, is to assess and give weight in accordance with the criteria as to what that did in that round.
Yeah.
And like I said, one punch in the mouth is not, it could be the differential. It could be the separator. We could get super close rounds where we do look to consider, I think we've inflicted the same amount of damage on each other. So I'm going to think, now I'm going to consider the amount of strikes. We may have hurt each other the same, but I landed 20 more punches on you than you did to me. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give you that round. Then I can't quite work that out. So then, God, that was super close too. There was no grappling. I'm going to look at the aggression to help me. Who was the person dictating the pace, place, and location? Who was the one effectively moving forward who wanted to look like he was in the fight, etc.? Taking control. That's why I say about octagon control, I'd throw it away tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I'd throw it away. I don't think we need it.
Effective progression would be a nicer way to put it. No.
I said we don't need it.
What do we not? What do
I
we
would
not
stick
need
with
then?
A because if I am aggression? If I am actively moving forward, dictating the pace, place, and location, and looking to press the fight and bring it to you, case control's coming with me. I'm inherently taking that anyway.
But what? So, but what if you've got a fight that where both parties are being equally aggressive?
Okay,
like Sanchez Guida, for example.
Okay.
So then you need something else. Like you're going down the scoring criteria. So striking and grappling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't remember the fight clearly.
I can't remember the fight.
But I'm just taking an example where a fight is.
But that's your opinion, Dan Hardy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You.
But that's where I'm struggling with the judges, because I don't trust what their opinion is, because I don't know what their education is.
But like I said, I'm not going to talk about specific. But we have some amazing judges in this sport.
Yeah.
And right here in the UK too.
Yeah.
You know, that's why Andy Foster was the guy when he was talking about, when you heard him on the same podcast with Ariel, and he was talking about, you're all right there, Amy? Yeah, you okay? Sure, God bless. Okay, so Andy Foster was talking about, you know, at the high level, listen, new blood and official, we have to nurture them through.
Yeah.
Don't talk to me about nurture. It's one of the things I hold closest to my heart is when I train and teach other officials, you know, globally.
Mm-hmm.
I've taught them in, done seminars in 20 countries. Because
we
need these guys. We need these guys. When the big show rolls out of town and there's little local fights every week, we need these articulate, you know, considered and educated officials to look after the sport.
Mm. Yeah, but how do we ensure that they are?
It's training and education. The same as anything.
But it's just the thing is, especially with the athletic commissions and them kind of bringing their own.
But you're just picking on the USA there, Dan.
No, I'm not necessarily, because that's just where my experience is from sitting outside watching the fights predominantly. I know the judges in Europe are good. Like, I mean, we have some decisions, but then we have some weird decisions sometimes, but then that's based on perspective of
Dan,
the judges.
And that's the point, mate. Look, a judge, what's a judge's job? In a nutshell.
To determine who won the round.
To give you... I'm going to give you my opinion on a fight.
Go on then.
Whether it's... No. I'm talking about the judge.
Okay.
A judge's job is to give you his opinion...
Yes.
...on a 3 or 5 round fight.
Uh-huh.
Who did he think won the fight? That's what a judge is there to do. And there's 3 of them. Okay? We've got to take this utopia out of the, there will always be an element of subjectivity related to a fight. You can't have a perfect science. Or just what we'll do then, it will, technology's great now, right? We'll invent cameras, etc. Put cameras around the, you know, octagon, write the most sophisticated algorithm and program and hand it over to them. Mm-hmm. Get away with humans. Do you want that?
No.
Why?
Because there's something instinctual about judging a fight.
Correct. So no matter what your algorithm is, et cetera, you know, with it, so technology could take over, but I've just said to you, do you want that? No.
No.
I want a human being.
Yeah.
Who's fit for purpose.
Who knows what they're watching.
Correct. Sitting in the chair, giving his opinion. That's why the three.
His or hers.
His or hers, sorry. Yes, a person.
Their opinion.
I said a person, didn't I?
You did.
I didn't say man.
You said his opinion.
A person. Yeah, there's some great female judges. And that's what it's about.
Yeah.
I am very pragmatic in the way in which I approach things. And like I said, it's not about it's simplistic. Mm-hmm. The criteria is there. I'm not saying it's the finish. I'm not saying it shouldn't be up for review. How can we make that better? But the way it goes at the moment, you're still going to have, and people go five judges. No. Why stop at five? Why not have 7, 10? Forget that. What I want is quality over quantity.
Yeah.
I shouldn't need five. If I have three well-versed, educated judges, that's enough.
Mm-hmm.
That's enough. I don't need five. What, to further corroborate or split the opinion further? I don't need that.
Yeah.
I don't need to do it. You're talking about, let's take judges sitting, watching in a month. No, I can't do that. The little nuances and the things, like you just said, Dan, do you want to hand it over to AI, artificial? No. Because that can't measure, when we talk about effective striking or effective grappling, when you see in the whites of a fighter's eyes, and you think, fuck, that hurt him.
Mm.
I seen him stagger. Mm-hmm. I heard him. There's a shot in a judge, you go, and the guy, he got winded. Only one judge may hear that.
Yeah.
The other two may not hear it. One of the most famous fights that the world blew up on, GSP Johnny Hendricks. I know this fight, bell to bell. I know it round to round. Why? Because I use it as a training aid for judges, because it's the perfect example. Again, super close fight. 48-47, either way, and it was on the night. It was a split decision, right? And it all came down to one judge in the first round, Glenn Trowbridge,
mm-hmm.
because he scored the first round 10-9 Hendricks. Mm-hmm. The other two judges, I think it was Rosales and Sal D'Amato, went 10-9 GSP. Go back and watch the fight. Super close round. When you go back and watch the fight, you'll see, I think it was the midway point, GSP goes for a single leg, pushing Johnny against the fence. Johnny throws a series of elbows.
Mm-hmm.
You'll know yourself, point of elbow to your skull.
Yeah.
Fucking hurts, doesn't
really
it?
Hurts.
Sounds like a coconut, mm-hmm. depending on...
Depends on how much space there
exactly.
is
exactly. Mine is very hollow. But you're standing there and you'll watch back and then you'll look back and you'll listen to Rosales after... you'll listen to Trowbridge after the fight. He based that as the most significant infliction of damage and that. And that is a perfectly plausible reason.
Yeah.
Perfectly plausible uh-huh. explanation. Look on the replay. When the elbows are coming in, who's the judge sat right there? Fucking 2 foot under where the elbows were landing.
So he can see exactly, yeah.
It was Glenn Trowbridge, the man who awarded that round to Johnny. Mm-hmm. And that was the whole furore.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take that to the side. Five rounds, three judges, 15 possible scores. 14 of the scores were identical. Every judge for 2, 3, 4, and 5 gave all three scores the same. But it was the split decision controversy in the first round because one judge saw and heard something that the other two didn't.
Yes.
Ta-da.
Yeah. So then does that not support the argument that more judges is more eyes to see those kind of things? Like, I mean, and I'm just...
And ears.
I'm just playing... Yeah, exactly. I'm just playing devil's advocate. But
no, Dan, I don't think it is.
So,
no.
You know what I mean?
No.
No.
No, because I will revert it back to the quality over quantity approach. Give me one.
Yeah.
Give me one well-versed. Why are you laughing? You know I'm passionate.
I know, but that's the desperation we're getting down to.
Give me one.
Just one good judge.
Look at boxing. Look at boxing in the UK. Until you get to championship level, the fucking ref is deciding the winner.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
But the thing that I don't understand, though, like going back to this weekend as an example, so the Andre Ewell fight, the judge that scored 30-27 for Andre Ewell.
Yes.
I think that the media or the fans or someone should be able to put in a request that that person should come to the press conference. And then they can say, please explain to us what you saw in that round or in that fight that scored you that way.
Mm.
Because that explanation of what Glenn Trowbridge saw in the Johnny Hendricks fight makes perfect sense.
Doesn't it?
Bringing him
in. But guess what?
Yeah.
Look at the...
But he didn't get that say, did he?
Huh?
He didn't, but there wasn't an opportunity to get that say. I mean, I think it works both ways. I think the benefit is that the people that want a say will be able to then have one. But then the people that don't want to say won't be wanting to judge because they won't want to be put on the spotlight. And if you're judging somebody else, you should be there to be judged.
I think that's plausible. I understand it. I get it. But regulators, some people like I said about the official spit, it's the most antiquated, out of touch, a lot of Ariel was saying, you know, if an official went out there and was, you know, like I said, nobody needs to tell me how to talk about this sport in professional fashion with integrity.
Yeah.
If I was going out there being a loose-lipped fucking moron, then I'd deserve everything that came my way.
Yeah.
And I was throwing him under the bus. But I'm not. Yes, I've got my fellow colleagues' backs. Mm. Yes, I have. And for good fucking reason. But by the same token, you know, if I didn't have to, then I could say that. You can articulate that in a professional sense.
Yeah, but MMA would always come first for you, regardless of your relationships with the other officials.
I know, because you know me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But Big Bash Johnny 123 on Twitter, he fucking don't. That's why they talk shit.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
But if there was a circumstance,
I don't know Big Bash Johnny. If there is a...
We're going to search that guy now.
If there is a... But you know what I mean? MMA, you know, MMA Nerd 124. Well, the fucking clue's in the name, mate.
Yeah. But then, like, so say after the Covington fight,
yeah,
if you got the opportunity to go to the press conference,
mm-hmm.
would you have not wanted to go?
Of course.
Exactly. But you also know referees that wouldn't have wanted to go.
Yes.
They shouldn't be fucking refereeing.
But Dan, listen.
They just shouldn't be refereeing.
Okay, then that's your opinion.
Yeah.
But apparently, when a ref wants to articulate, when a ref wants to speak, when a ref wants to make things better, you want to be famous and you want the camera. So I can't win either way. And you know, people go about with the referee, oh, he interjects himself in the fight. Yeah, because that's my fucking job. You idiot. I've had so many fights of the year, right? When you wouldn't know it was me.
Yeah.
Help, dear Lord, utopia for me. If you fight, there's someone up there.
Yeah.
If you fight, okay, and you stick to the rules, you will not hear a single solitary word from me.
Yep.
How many times you had me ref you?
I actually think 14.
Have I ever adversely affected you in a fight?
No, never.
Never?
No.
And the people go, oh, he's interjecting the fight.
No.
Yeah, you fucking dickhead. Because something happened. And so what do you want? You want me to sit and watch three fouls happen and ignore them? Or do you want me to act upon, do you want me to do my job?
Mm.
And do you want me to do it with concise and you know, deal with it concisely with authority and understanding and composure and confidence? Is that what you want? Or do you want me just to say, you know what, Billy background, that's not my job, let him get on. Mate, like I said to you, Eric Cantona, you're not getting 2 minutes of frustration here, you're getting 15, 20 years of frustration.
So if you're sitting Octagon side and Mark Goddard's referee and he starts to grind his teeth during the fight, I go and get a drink because at some point someone's going to get stood to the face.
But this is the thing. And sometimes I think, when I think we can't win,
yeah.
Some regular, they don't want us to talk.
Yeah.
Then if you talk, people go, oh, he's looking at me, what's that? I don't need the camera. I'm 6 foot fucking three, dressed in black, and I stand front and center. They put my name on the screen at the beginning of every fight and my face. That's enough for me.
Yeah.
If you hear me talk in a fight ever, it's because something's gone wrong.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah.
If two guys are battling, I'm not leaning in. All right, guys, how you doing down there? You watch Coronation? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just doing my job.
Uh-huh.
Just tell me what you want. And I think most people, they get it. You know, they want the confidence, and they want somebody who's driven and understands, you know, what he's doing. Mm-hmm. I just, like I said,
I always felt relieved when I knew you were refereeing my fight, because I knew you would fucking leave me to do my job. Unless I absolutely needed you to step in, which you never did in any of my fights. I don't think I ever lost with you refereeing.
You didn't?
No. You always left me. But there were a couple of times it was close. The Matt Thorpe armbar, for example. Mm-hmm. I mean, he nearly took my arm home with him. Uh-huh. And like, that was...
But guess what? That was what? How many years ago?
Oh, geez.
14?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I even knew what I was doing back then. Fucking who'd have thunk it? You know what I mean, Dan? Yeah. Dan, it's so frustrating. Mm-hmm. It's so frustrating.
So then, what do you do with the reaction that you get from a fighter like Covington then?
I'm a professional, mate, and I take it in my stride, because, you know, obviously when I'd done the Covington fight, it was a great end to a good year. It was an amazing fight. Wasn't it? Mm. It was such a spectacle. Mm. The fight was brilliant. Yeah. Back and forth, blah, 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 bam. Difficult fight. I know I handled it on the money to a T. Classic case in point. And again, I'm like, you know, I'm trying to keep hold of a difficult... When I'm bringing them together, going, guys, come on. You know, I think, I can't remember, fourth round or whatever. Yeah. Dealing with the fouls. I'm not making shit up. That was a specifically and, you know, unquestionably difficult fight to ref. Not many referees would have kept it together. I don't think there's a few of us out there.
That's why people you get the
know.
Big ones, though.
Well, yeah, and the others, you know. I don't know who the great refs are. And I'm, you know, blessed to have great, great colleagues. And it's the same for judging, like I said. And I'm defending my colleagues again, because, you know, like Andy Foster was saying about, if you guys knew what some of these judges put into this game, you know, the Sals, the Chris's, we have our own little forums in the UK, the Bens, Ben Cartledge, Leatherby, Mark Collette, Sutherland, what these guys put in. We're not turning up for a jolly.
Yeah.
This is my passion. Mm-hmm. This is what I've give at points too much of my life to. Am I beyond reproach? Never. Am I a human being? Yes, I am. Can I be wrong and make a mistake? Unquestionably. How many times have I got to prove it? How many times have I served myself up publicly? Mm-hmm. But just, you know, give us a fucking voice back.
Yeah.
Let us fight our corner. You know, let us go back. But going back to the same with the Covington thing. And then obviously put a tweet out immediately after. I didn't respond. I didn't have to. Where would that leave me? On a professional basis, I get into it with a fighter on Twitter. I'm always going to come off worse. So you rise above and you move away. And then Colby Dunn 2 weeks ago, or a week ago, 7 weeks after the fight, he came out and he had his... There was two specific things that I saw. One was his conversation with Ariel, which is a little bit more mild-mannered, and he gave his opinion and this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. People are looking for me to jump in and go, I'm not going to do it. He'd done another one on sports thingy when he was totally and utterly inappropriate, abusive, threatening. It's all there in his own words.
Yeah.
Am I going to bite to that? I don't have to, you know, because when you look at that fight... And people, I'm going to talk about the mechanics, and people talk about why was that fight stopped. That fight was 24 minutes long at the point. He was, you know, getting beat up and beating up. It was back, 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 back. The arguments there, like I said, two, some judge had it 2-2-3, either or. That was a competitive fight. Those first four rounds were competitive, and the fifth started competitive. And then, obviously, Kamaru started to get the upper hand. And then he stung him a few times. Mm-hmm. Then there was the knockdown, the first knockdown. Then there was the second knockdown. And obviously, all this is real-time whirring in my mind. I'm not, you know, the clock. I am aware of the clock. I don't want to stop the fight. I don't want to stop the fight. I want this fight to go the distance. You've had 24 minutes of war for the highest prize in the sport, from two A-line athletes. What's not to respect? What's not to understand? Mm-hmm. But then I'm seeing things unfold. And I see Colby get put down twice in rapid order. Plus, 24 minutes of back and forth before that. So there's a lot of damage sustained. Then I see him go down, and obviously he stays in that turtle position. Started on the double, then he's pulling hands back. This is where everything will narrow in for me. I'm now put firmly in the spotlight. I have a decision to make, and I'm trying to assess this. I have to assess this real time, coupled with everything I've saw, et cetera, et cetera. People talk about back of the head. They haven't got a fucking clue what the back of the head is. Not a clue. Mm-hmm. I'm not even going to go there. Not even going to go there, because what you think is the back of the head is not. Being clipped here and behind the ear, that's not the back of the head. Anyway, so I'm looking at Colby, and then I see the damage he's sustained, the two knockdowns, etc. And then when you are face down, when I can't see you, I can't read you, it's difficult for me to... That exasperates everything further. So I'm now trying to compute in my mind, are you there? Are you not? And obviously, you will know yourself. I can understand people's opinions. What I can't take is a lie, and I will never stand for a lie. And you know yourself how I articulate and how I talk to a fighter on a one-to-one in the dressing room in the back. I had a great conversation with Colby before the fight. He actually thanked me. He said, I'm glad you're my referee. Fact. He said, I'm glad you're my ref. I said what I expect. And one of the parting shots I will always say to a fighter, regardless of who it is, I say, if you're hurt, if I think you're in any danger in a fight, I said, I need you to do one thing. Just show me you're still there.
Yep.
And when I say show me, I don't. Sam Alvey said the same thing. He's told him to put the thumbs up. Never in 5,000 fights and 16 years of official have I ever, would I ever, or could I ever tell a fighter to show me a thumbs up.
Yeah.
Would never leave my lips.
No.
I don't say it. What I'm asking for and what I'm looking for is them to give me something to show me.
An intelligent response, so you know that they're still conscious.
Yeah, and this is the thing. And then I'll move on to the second. But the point is the could have and should have. You know, with Colby in that fight, obviously, like I said, it was a war, back and forth, giving damage, taking damage. Then the 20-second window, the two knockdowns. I know he's hurt. I know he's not out. I know he's hurt, which is why you'll see when he gets knocked down, I'll run in. I see him react, I move back. Second knockdown, you close the distance, run in, he reacts, I move back. Then the shots start coming in. This is when everything narrows down for me. And I have a choice to make. I have to make a choice one way or another. Could I have let that fight go on? Yeah. Could I have stood back and let it go on? Yeah. Should I have let? And that's the narrative here. Should I have? And this is the point where I make about... I'm assessing what happened. I'm assessing the position he's in. The two knockdowns. He's being punched. I don't want to leave him. And that, boom, my trigger's pulled. So I'll pull it back and I'll give you another scenario. We go back into that 20-second window. The two knockdowns occur. Kamara goes to that back side mount position, starts throwing in the blows, etc., etc. You'll hear me verbalize. I'll leave it. And then the next two shots that come through put Colby out of the game, unconscious and flat down on the floor. What are they going to say about me? I'm incompetent. I let him die, this, that, and the other. You want to see a fighter die? I've had all that before. And then you'll flip it to... So I'll stick on that a minute. So I'm trying to articulate the reasoning. And here's the thing. I'm giving you a reason. I'm being accessible. I'm giving you a response. I'm trying to tell you what's going through my mind. I don't make this shit up. I know what I'm doing, you know, and this is what happens. My job is to protect you. And regardless of you getting up and telling me you're fine at that point, it's over. And I'm like I said, I've said before, I'll go do things different. And this is the finite detail that, you know, the abuse, mate. The abuse was incalculable from that fight, honestly. But you know what? Suck it up, because you're an official and that's your job. But don't clap back or don't even offer a reason.
Yeah. But you can state your case. You can put a logical argument together as to why you made those decisions.
I think I just did.
Yeah, you did. Absolutely. That's what I think is important for officials to do. And that's what I don't think we're getting from judges.
Some people don't want us to do that.
But it doesn't matter. Those people need to change their perspective. People need to know that if they're coming to sit by an octagon and judge somebody, especially when there's so much on the line, they've got to be up to be judged themselves. Like, because that's going to filter out the people.
I agree with you.
I wouldn't want to be a judge. I've been doing martial arts for 31 years now, and I still don't feel like I could watch a fight live and go, I am definitely sure of this.
And then people talk, they'll go, like, obviously that fight, why did you stop calming that fight? Well, I think I've just articulated pretty concisely. And if you don't agree with me, so be it. As a fighter, I can take that. Some of the fact, like I said, mate, that's in the abuse. I'm talking because Colby was directly tagging me in his social media posts. Am I going to rise to that? No, I'm not. I just, you know what? Because I'm better than that, and I'm a professional, and I'll deal with it in another way, like trying to articulate and talk about my reasoning and why we do these things. Then you fast forward the following week. I was in Busan, South Korea, Frankie Edgar. Why did you let that fight? Well, the reason I let that fight go on is you look at the endings totally different. Number one, the fight's a minute old. Number two, he gets clipped and hurt and rocked, obviously. Yeah. Frankie's down. But he's doing something.
Always fighting.
Trying to get out. And look, I'm not saying that was Colby's fault. He's exhausted. He's hurt. You're damn right he was. He put everything into that fight. I can't big him up anymore, can I? Mm-hmm. So I've got one guy being inflammatory and derogatory about me. And then I'm here after all that time being complimentary because that's who I am and it's what I'll do. And then you got, the Frankie situation, the fight's a minute old. So, he got hurt and went down. Yes, but then it's real time window's kicking in again. I'm telling him to get out. And he's moving. He's still sustaining damage, moving. Gets up, hurt, boom, stop. And I've put my flag in the ground and said, that's it, no more. Mm-hmm. And those are two different scenarios.
Yeah.
People like the way that the Covington fight ended was very similar to the... I got criticism at the beginning of the year for a fight with Sam Alvey and Jim Crute. It ended in almost entirely the same position with the same, Sam was hurt, wobbled, dropped, then pushed over and the shots are coming in. And like I said, I was very public about that then. Could have, yes, should have. I made my choice, And this is the thing. It's like trying to pull it back and, like I said, I'm pretty sure I'm making good sense.
You are.
I'm trying to offer articulated reasoning as to why. If I came out and blurbled a load of nonsense, people are like, what the hell is he talking about? What fight was he watching? But I'm giving you verbatim fact. You're entitled to your own opinions. I don't actually subscribe to that school of thought. But you're not entitled to your own facts. And this is what... You're not, are you?
No.
People like... Everybody wants an opinion on a fight. I'm more concerned about a reasoned opinion. If you give me a balanced, educated opinion. Look, if you're driving a bus and I run alongside you at the traffic lights, fuck, smash the window and go, you fucking dickhead. You're driving the bus like a prick. What are you doing now? Because that's my timeline on Twitter and Instagram for 2 weeks. That's my timeline.
Road rage, basically.
Yeah, and you're going to die and you this and that. Kill yourself. You're scum, you're betting on fights, you're a cheat, you're this. Mate, and I'm talking not one or two or 50 of that, hundreds, literally hundreds. But that's, that's the life of a ref.
Yeah.
Or is it?
Yeah. Is it worth it?
Huh?
Is it worth it? I know you've had this conversation with yourself a couple of times.
Yeah, well, I'm still here, and I?
Yeah, you are. I know.
20 years later, but I'll be honest with you, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
Is it when something like that happens? It's weird because obviously you've got that and that output. Like I said with other sports, everybody saw Colby's reaction and then that, when he's calling me this and calling it one thing to have an opinion and disagree with a stoppage, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. When you're calling me a cocksucker and calling me a cheat, don't come back to America I'm going to slap you. I'm going to
Yeah, I can't wait to see that.
That's a different thing, Dan Hardy. That's a different thing altogether.
Yeah.
How that's what I struggle to compute, is that we look at other A-line top-level professional sports like football and whatever. If you look at a referee in the wrong way, which I don't necessarily agree with, because sometimes I think referees are too protected, you know? I'm a human being, mm-hmm. and surely there's a reasonable line there, you yeah. know? But what? We absorb it, you scrub it off, and
yeah,
you get on with it.
It's a little unfortunate when... Because the thing is with Covington, he's fully bought into what America seems to be about at the moment, which is that Stephen A. Smith antagonist kind of...
That just, was a weird one.
Yeah, he is a weird one.
No. I said that situation was a weird one. Which but one? That's Stephen A. Smith.
Yeah, I don't even know why he's near the octagon. He's ridiculous. But the thing is, he's an antagonist. I don't think he knows anything about anything. He's just there to just piss people off and antagonize. And Colby has identified this characteristic in the public, and he's pandering to it. He's playing to it. The same as Trump is, which is why he's on that bandwagon. Like, he likes that antagonist thing, the on Twitter being inflammatory and all that kind of stuff. And it's part of his character. The thing is, if you're in the same room with him, he won't even make eye contact with you. It's the same with everybody he falls out with. Every single person that he's pissed off and fallen out with, they all say the same thing. As soon as they're in the same room, he's a different person. It's a character he's playing.
Imagine.
But you've been caught up in this.
Imagine
in this
if I don't. Imagine as a yeah, but what I'm saying is the balance here. As an official, you know what I'm like to official. Said, mind how you conduct yourself in public, etc., yeah. etc. Imagine if an official done that. Or they yeah. come even a 10% of it. That's 20 years of my life down the yeah. drain. I would never work again. You know, you just. But it's hey-ho, you know, such is the life. It's the lot. So I was talking about that Stephen A. Smith thing. And I articulated it. Don't tell me how to talk publicly with integrity and professionalism. I don't want to jump on the bandwagon and lay into, because he got an incalculable amount of abuse too. Mm. I welcome Stephen A. Smith into the sport. Welcome him. Yes, I do. Okay. And the reason, I welcome him in with education and reason.
Okay.
Like you said, you're
not coming for education or reason.
Dan, but hear me out. Like you said, you know, he's inflammatory. He's there to get a reaction.
Yeah.
The guy is a star. In the US, he's a big voice. It's like, I don't know, Gary Lineker or Alan Shearer coming into that. Obviously, they wouldn't be like him, but a big, notable sports media personality shining light on the UFC. What's not to welcome? Well, what's not to welcome is how you articulated your reasoning. Forget the fact you were trying to make a point or an opinion. That's not, and this is my pragmatic mind, everybody goes on a tangent. No, let's wheel it back. That's not what people was bearing umbrage to. The reason people were upset is because of the words in which you used to describe when he was saying he was disgusted, he's a quitter, etc. We're not used to that for fighters, especially somebody like Cerrone, who's an absolute warhorse, you know, a legend of the sport, been there more. That's... Everyone's, you know, I think Ariel was defending him, and I get that, and I welcome Stephen A. Smith into MMA, but just come correct. That's all we're saying. Don't label a fighter a quitter or that. The point you were trying to make when he was saying we didn't see enough of Conor McGregor, he's right, because the fight was 40 seconds long. Could you see enough? But then when it crossed over, then when he was saying about Cerrone, give your opinion on Cerrone's performance, but don't label, don't say you're disgusted.
That's his role. That is specifically what he does. He's there to say things that antagonize and piss people off. Like, and I didn't say anything.
That's the backlash.
Yeah, that's what it is. And that's fair, because we just don't need that in martial arts. That's not what martial arts is about.
I agree with you.
Right? I didn't say anything too dissimilar in the open mat on BT Sport right after the event.
You ain't gonna label Donald Cerrone.
Of course not. But the point that I was making was the same point that he was trying to make, but he was trying to make it in an inflammatory way. The point I was making is that I was disappointed with Cowboy, because I know that his head can go one of two ways in a fight, and the way that I expected it to go, unfortunately, it went that way, which is why the fight was over so quickly. Yeah, I mean, he got injured and stuff, but like, he's come through those rounds before, and that's a decision. Like, his first round against Leon was rough, but he saw the decision on that one. There's a decision in Cowboy's head, and sometimes he does go, "Ah, I don't want to be here anymore," because you can see it afterwards.
I've been when there.
Of course, you can see it afterwards when there's you see that a bit of relief. There was relief in his post-fight interview. It was like, it was kind of glad it's over. Like, I could see that in him, and I get that. There's a load of pressure in those circumstances, and not everyone's Conor McGregor. Not everyone deals with that pressure very well. And unfortunately, Cowboy not being able to deal with that pressure very well, I think robbed him of what could have been a better performance for him. Because I think that was a winnable fight for him. I don't think we can count Cowboy out in any fight, but I think the reason we count him out is because of his mentality. And the point I made on the open match show was that I was disappointed because I wanted to see more from him. Mm-hmm. I wanted to see more from McGregor as well. Mm-hmm. But I said it in a way that was genuine, like I'm a fan of both fighters. I'm not trying to piss anybody off.
Yeah, the fight didn't last that long.
No. The thing that pissed people off more than anything is the fact that I was wearing sunglasses inside at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Were you?
Fucking mad,
bro. I'd give out to you for that too.
Well, I don't give a fuck. It's Vegas, and it was like 1 o'clock in the morning, and the lights were like that. And we've been in a dark room all night for the whole main card commentating.
I bet the comments were great, wouldn't they? Yeah. I'm just here for the comments.
Yeah, I don't care. If people are watching it, then I'm happy. It was funny though. I like those kind of comments. But it was anyway. That's beside the point. The point I'm making is that I was critical of Cowboy and his performance. I was celebratory of Conor's performance because he looked great. I was critical of Cowboy, but not in a negative way.
Not in a personal manner.
No.
And you are verbose, and your choice of vocabulary would be select. You understand? And then
just say that sentence again. You were
verbose, and your choice of vocabulary would be correct.
You're not getting that on many other podcasts, gents.
You're not, and yeah, you're welcome. And then, like I said, with Stephen, then he made that video where he doubled down. And this is where I go mental.
Mm.
You know, my brain will separate, literally. And I'm going, you're entitled to your opinion. Mm-hmm. But you're skirting the fact. So he went on the tangent and he went, excuse me, I've been kind of... Nobody's talking about how long you've been doing this, the sports you've been covering, and your credentials, etc. as a sports reporter. What we're talking about here is much more than it was your choice of words you used. Wheel it back a bit. Wheel up. We're not talking about you offering your opinion. We're talking about the way in which you did it, mm-hmm. which was there for all to hear and see. And then the second port of call that I make is time served is not an automatic rite of passage. Just because I've been covering cricket for 20 years doesn't mean I'm going to bash the door down and then be the voice of reason for football, you know? I'm going to welcome you in as a sports broadcast professional.
Yeah.
Do it right, you know? And that's the... I think that was, like I was saying, that was the backlash that Stephen A. got. Not because he was of his, you know, his character and the way he's colourful on camera and this, that and the other. It was purely to do with the choice of words that he used to describe a fighter that's... Mm. Respected and beloved.
But what's that TV show he does? It's him and that other dude.
I don't know.
That other... I can't think what his name is. And they just basically just argue about shit. And it's...
I haven't seen it.
I've seen clips of it a few times when I've been in the US. And it looks like a parody of a real TV show. It doesn't even seem like a real TV show. It seems like they're just arguing for the sake of arguing. And I don't... It just...
I'd watch that.
Yeah, you would. You like to be fucking aggro. You like to... I said the other week talking to Owen and these boys, it's like they're like kind of sitting this, like they're like stewing this negative soup. You know what I mean? Like they'll wake up in the morning and they'll stick it on. And
I don't like negative soup.
One of the channels will be... And they'll just... Like whatever channel it is, whatever one of these channels is, it's going in the background while they're getting ready for their day, making the coffee or whatever. And in the background, it's just going, like that's why I like the little Piers fucking Morgan. Like kick that guy into the ocean. Like, you know what I mean? Like they're just,
you know what?
They
antagonize me. In the morning. So I quite like a bit of Piers in the morning.
But then you get in your car and start fucking yelling at people out the window. Right? That's the negative soup that you've been sitting in all morning while you've been sipping your aggro coffee. You fired yourself up, you get in your car and you go
aggro
fucking
coffee.
You go and fucking anger at the world.
Who?
You do. Everybody does that does that. Mate, everybody does that does that.
Do you
that.
Follow me around in the car? How do you know I'm not chilled?
I know you're not chilled, Mark. Eric, what's your favourite phrase to use when you're driving? Come on.
Look at this cunt. That's 100%, mate. I was laughing about that. There was a thing on Facebook, like a very British thing. It said, like, you know, like the top 10 phrases of like drivers. You're there, it's like, fucking hell. Or like, you know, if you've got enough room. And then top of the list was, look at this cunt. I know the Americans hate that word, but that was it. I say that. I gotta be careful when the kids are in the car, but yeah. It's I'm not that bad driving, mate. Well, I'm not.
No, you're not a bad driver. You're just an aggro driver because you're out. You just generally.
How do
aggro.
You know?
Because that's your favourite sentence when you're driving. Look at this. No, that's a
I'm not saying I haven't said it, but I'm not just driving around the road like fucking Tourette's out the window, just shouting it out.
What?
It's but with reason.
With reason, of course. On planes and in dinner, in breakfast, dining halls.
What about, remember
and...
I tweeted you when I was in Rome Airport? Fucking hell, mate. I was like Fox in the Chicken Run. I was trapped in the plane was about to board. I had one guy with an apple, right? He was fucking going to town on this. I thought I was sat next to a horse. Then I got a geezer with a crusty roll and crisps. Mate, I texted you, didn't I? I went, if I don't make it home, you're going to know why.
Yeah, you've Eric Cantona'd someone.
And then you were saying about, just put your headphones on. And then I'm like, I want to put them on, but I know it's still happening.
You want to be aggro.
It's still happening.
You
want to
be aggro. That's a choice. You want to be aggro. So right. we've discussed, I'm sure we've talked on the podcast, it's misophonia, right? It's a sensitivity to noise. It makes you angry. Makes me angry. I'm the same. Like my poor little sister used to suck.
See?
Her, yeah. It's legit. It's called misophonia. My little sister used to suck her cornflakes in the morning because it used to make me angry before school. That's the truth. And I'm sorry, Jenna. That's very, very fucking true. I like it makes you fucking aggro. But there was a point where I'm like, oh, okay. Oh, it's me. Like there's a bit of circuitry in my brain that makes me aggro when I hear someone crunching. I used to get it. The studio we used to use it inside the Octagon before we moved to IMG Studios was tiny. And like I'd be in there trying to review the playlist before we'd record. Same thing. I've got someone eating crisps on one side and someone eating a fucking apple on the other. And I am sweating with rage.
Kills me off,
yeah.
Mate.
It drives kills me fucking mental.
And the one bloke, the guy, I was like, I was a bit torn. I was like, who's fucking annoying me the most? Like, it was definitely the guy with the apple.
Yeah.
So I just turned and like just maintained.
You just stared at him?
Yeah.
You stared him down?
And then he looked at me and he knew. Like he looked at me again. I just kind of held it there.
Yeah.
For a good few minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was mad. Like Love Island. Yes, I did. I was watching Love Island. The missus had it on. And like,
of course
see,
she did.
When they kiss,
yeah,
man, I fucking picked up the remote. I was like, ah, yeah. I could like that noise. I was like, honestly, for a couple of seconds,
yeah.
That noise, what's it called, Miss?
Misophonia.
Misophonia. Well, yeah. I've got it in tall order.
Yeah. It's funny because I realized after talking to you about it that, like, there was a point when I realized it was me, and I'm like, okay, it's me that's the problem.
Mm.
The volume of people eating shouldn't be an outwardly aggressive reaction from me. So I go, okay. So if I hear it now, I go, okay, that's me. I'm angry, so I'm not gonna direct it at them. If it's bothering me enough, I'll leave the room, which I do sometimes. I'll just leave the room.
I did remember the Australia story. Mm-hmm. I do try and that.
Yeah.
I've tried that approach. It's me. Yeah. Ask for about 2 seconds.
That's that angry soup that you're sitting in while you're drinking your coffee in the morning.
Because people are bombarding me with angry arrows.
Yeah.
I wake up in the morning, I look on, you know, on Twitter and everyone's like, and it's weird because like the Instagram stuff, they're like, I would love to be, but you've got to look at it. I don't respond to them. I'm in there. Yeah, but you're kind of like, oh, block, or just block them, move on. But you still got to look at it to block it. You know what I mean? It's weird.
You've got you've just got to. I mean, it's not been easy all the time for me. Like when I was fighting Marcus Davis, I was getting death threats, like consistently. Like every. I mean, I've still got them in a folder or something because they're quite funny. But a lot of them.
I've had some pearlers, mate.
Have you? Yeah.
Oh, and stupid. Like I deleted a lot of them. No. But it's
don't
like
delete them now. We'll read them out on the podcast.
But it's negative. Like you said, I don't want to sit in and I don't want the phone full of all this. You look into your message requests or whatever, and there's just like some of them are bizarre, mate.
Yeah.
Like. I've entered a few of them a few times. Like you've gone back into them. I'm just like, you know, I'm thinking I've got to entertain this fool.
Mm-hmm.
It's because some of them are just fucking doolally.
Yeah.
Like mental, grade A mental. They must just sit there like, it's like the Ricky Gervais thing, you know, he's saying about, you know, if you read something or a joke or whatever, you've got a choice to be offended. Uh-huh. Yeah, I guess because I'd love to learn that. You know, he's saying like you, it's like going into town and the public notice board says guitar lessons. Have you saw it?
Mm-mm.
He said there's a guitar, you'll see a sign that says guitar lessons, call this number. And he's like, dials the number. Hello? Are you offering guitar lessons? Yeah, I am. I don't fucking want guitar lessons. And he's like, well, it's not for you then. Why did you read it? Choose to get angry and then respond.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's
that's like Dave Chappelle said on one of his a good analogy. Recent ones. Dave Chappelle said he said something and the crowd were kind of a bit on the fence about it. And he went, hey, you clicked on my face, motherfuckers. Talk about Netflix. like the amount of people that watch a show and then complain about it afterwards.
Yeah, like, you know, you want a reaction, complain when you get one. And that's why I said like, but the messages, damn, we're not talking about 10, 20, thousands over the top, but hundreds. And you're just like, you might, I wouldn't have the time to sit there. And
it's an epidemic though, isn't it? It's an epidemic. Mate. But honestly, I believe, social media, I mean, there are lots of things, you know, involved in it as far as like lifestyle and pharmaceuticals and all those kind of things. But that, and I've seen it in a few different people that I've interacted with over my years in America. They wake up in the morning, Fox goes on, CNN goes
That's
on.
That's twice
whatever.
You've singled out America.
No, because it's an American epidemic. We don't have it as much over here, I don't think.
What, social media?
Like, no, that like aggro, like having two people on a show just to be antagonistic.
Mm. I do agree with you on that because...
Like Piers Morgan, with people...
I find it funny.
Yeah, but that's the thing. We don't take him seriously. But in America, he's there to antagonize people.
Yeah, people believe it.
Yeah.
You know that he's like, on GMTV, he's like... Yeah, it's, you know.
Like, imagine, like, there was a Japanese scientist, doctor, that did the experiment on the water. Do you remember that?
Water torture.
He subjected, no, not water. He subjected water to negative words, negative emotions, and that kind of thing. And then he crystallized the water, and under a microscope, you can see that the structure of the water is different based on what it's been exposed to. I know you're going to be fucking
skeptical. Fuck
off. I'm going to find you this stuff. Negativity is what I'm saying.
He was there again. Look at you, you fucking to a bucket of water. Who done that for an hour?
I'm going to find this research. I'm going to send it to
get
you.
Get out of
I'm
town.
Telling you. I'm telling
and
you.
The water crystallized differently.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
Water's different. Every single glass of water is different depending on what it's been through and stuff. There's no reason why you can't affect water energetically. I believe that absolutely.
I respect your belief.
But you can also affect people energetically, right?
Of course.
So if you're waking up in the morning and you're sticking that on while you're having breakfast, or you're in the car listening to two radio hosts.
No, you're right.
Like you're living in this fucking aggro soup.
You're
which
right.
Makes you interact aggro outwardly.
I get that totally. Right? Like the propaganda and stuff is a thing.
Yeah.
Media propaganda is a thing. Because when I went, normally when I go to the US, I'm in, I'm out. And the last thing we do is have time to watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
You don't, because you're in, you're working, you're out.
Yeah.
Constant over years. But when I went there on holiday with the kids to Florida, and we was in like we hired like a villa with the pool and everything, you know, the whole thing.
Mm.
And then the TV's on in the background, the news. Honestly, I was like, fuck it. I had to turn it off.
Yeah.
Because it was, yes, it was just like, bah, they're going to get terror, attack, bam, dab. And you look at it, and it is all, but that's what they say. News is not, you don't turn on the news and look at a puppy farm, mm-hmm. or they show you about, you know, a person doing a good act,
mm-hmm.
generally. You might get a 5-second snippet on local news, but the main media channels, it's about bomb, scare, you know, terror, look at famine, mm-hmm. hunger, all the negative things in the world.
Yeah,
there is a choice to, I don't want to, that's what I said, like, with social media. I'm not saying I get offended, like, but when people... share videos of, you know, like the cruelty and stuff. I struggle with it.
I follow a couple of people that are they're activists, they're hardcore, and I mean, the thing is, I do it to myself sometimes as well, though, because I'm subscribed to change.org, and I don't know if you've been on it, but I get emails from them couple of day, and go on.
Yeah, no, you're saying about the videos, and they go, yeah, but it's bad, and it goes on in the world. We want to highlight it.
Yeah.
Well, so does fucking murder and things far more consequential and worse than murder go on every day.
Yeah.
I don't want to watch a video of it. No. I don't want to see it, you know? I think that argument is like, I don't know, it's personal, isn't it?
It's the awareness education thing, isn't it? But I just think, like, and the thing is, like, and I'm not, I don't want to keep having to circle back to Stephen A. Smith, but the, that.
Yeah,
that,
you do.
Well, that, it's just. Well,
third
we,
time.
We call him Stephen A. Thrush on the show. That, that was his knees.
What the hell was that?
it's just that antagonistic energy. It was just sad to see it next to the Octagon. It was just sad to see it next to the Octagon.
Yeah, that's what, how
it
I felt.
I was like, oh, really? Are we there now?
I get, but it's that thing again, we were joking about it, you know, what offended me, you know, of course, because MMA is close to our hearts and this, that, and the other. And then when you've got it's a foreign entity, we're not used to seeing Stephen A. Smith. We're not used to, even if somebody revered an MMA came in and spoke like that, I think people would be like, hang on a minute, what's going on?
100%.
But the fact of, like I said, I don't know, is he going to,
I don't know. I mean, he gets paid stupid amounts of money from ESPN. Just to.
It's like an obscene. Like I said, he's millions of followers. Yeah. He's very famous.
But that's the problem. That's what shows it's an epidemic, is that people are gravitating towards that negative energy that he's creating. He creates a negative vibration. That's his job. He's paid for negativity. And then people gravitate towards him because now they've got this addiction to this negativity as well, because they don't like the job they're doing. They're sick, sitting in traffic. Their diet's shit. Their fucking kids are aggro. You know what I mean? There's a load of... And then they just sit in that negative soup and they're like, oh, he's angry. I feel like that. So, like angry and sad and...
I don't fucking want guitar lessons!
But it's like, you know, you kind of got to pay attention to this. It's like people fucking blaming kids doing atrocities on Marilyn Manson and that kind of shit. The problem is not that they were listening to Marilyn Manson. They were listening to Marilyn Manson because there's something about that energy that they identify with. Like when I was in my teens and I'm training every day and I'm grinding and I'm fucking uncomfortable and sore, I'm Pantera, I'm Machine Head, I'm fucking Madball, I'm Biohazard, I'm fucking aggro, because that's what gets me through it. But if I wake up in the morning and I put that on, it shapes my day.
Yeah.
It completely shapes my day. So I'm Ravi Shankar in the morning. You know what I mean? I'm like, there's
Zen.
Zen. I need to, like, people need to manage what's coming in so they can control what's going out.
Very, like they said about, you know, the ship. A ship don't sink because it don't let water in, you know? Very philosophical. Mm-hmm. But it, like I said, the misophonia.
Yeah.
You know, I tried to, you know, lasted a few seconds. I told you when I was in Australia last year, I got up, I stormed out. They were sitting next to me. And it was like, I was like, you're just like looking, going, can you not hear? And all of that, his wife was there. It was like 50, 60 years of age. And his missus is there. And I'm like, you're probably, your brain's tuned out to it by now. Because you fucking
like
must.
Next to a railway, isn't it?
Yeah, you must hear what I hear. But you're obviously, either that or I'm like, can I get that quality that you have that I just, I can hear it, but it's not going to annoy me.
I walked out of the Joker in Amsterdam.
Who?
The Joker.
Oh, you told
movie.
Me, because the bloke, I've kicked off in cinema houses, mate. Yeah, a few times.
Him. And his missus was the same, which is why it made sense they were together. But it was fucking horrendous. It was so bad. I'm sitting there and
crisps, was it?
It was everything. It was popcorn, it was crisps, he had packets of shit. He had his fucking leftover Christmas dinner with him. Oh man, I could have strangled him. But we were sitting on this sofa. So I got this like kind of wing back cushion edge. So I got my scarf up against it and I'm pinning my ear to it.
You're trying to lip read.
But that's the thing, you see, and like you were saying with the headphones. Like, if I could have put headphones on to block that out so I can just watch that, and I know that the noise cancelling would have worked, I would have done it. No, I would have done it. But I'm trying to block it, and I'm watching the movie, and I'm probably, on a percentage basis, hearing the movie more than I'm hearing him now, but I'm selectively choosing to tune into him because I'm already fucking angry about it. Exactly. You know what I mean? Like, I can hear 80% of the movie, but that 20% is going to make me want to murder this guy. I'm going to drown him in popcorn, the first time it's ever happened in history. But I had to leave. It just got to a point, I'm like, there's no good can come of this. No good can come of this.
Dan Hardy attacks 80-year-old man eating popcorn. Yeah. I didn't know it was dark. I didn't know how old he was.
It's just fucking, but I had to leave. But it's weirdly, it overtakes you, doesn't it?
Listen, coming back a little bit, obviously we've had a laugh again, but we started off serious and was talking about the judging and the scoring.
Are we going back to serious now?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Just for a minute. But just, I don't fucking want to go back to the scoring. People were talking, that's what I said, let's slow everything down. Let's still discuss things, but let's discuss it factually. Let's get a level understanding. What I was saying about, like I said, I kept saying about Joe, because Joe's got the biggest voice and mouth in this platform, you know, metaphorically and actually, you know, he's influential. I would love for Joe to come on a judging course or something like that, just to see if he'd think any different or think, oh, I didn't think about it like that. You know, I want more reporters to do that or people who are media guys.
I'd like you to go on his podcast.
Who?
You. It would just be, it's the best thing, the best way to do it. One of his MMA podcasts.
Oh, yeah. Fascinating. I'd love it, but listen, mate, he's got superstars on there, isn't he?
He'll want to talk to you about bugs having mushrooms growing out their heads and stuff, though.
Yeah. But anyway, going back to Scotland, people going about, and then what they do is they sensationalise and then they start, they're looking for bastardisation and weird and wonderful who are open scoring. I'm not a fan of open scoring, okay? And I know they're saying about Kansas is going to, I think Mark Raimondi was a guy who was talking, saying, I want to see it try. I get what he's saying about seeing it try to open it. But people are missing. Well, there's a lot of obvious things for open scoring. Like, you imagine as a judge, when you sat there, it's a stressful thing to do. You know, like I said, people are giving out on these judges. But I said, like, the Sals, the Chrissies, the Derricks, the Bens, the Davids, the Pauls, the Collettes, all these people, they're dedicated. They put everything they've got into this. But you imagine as a judge, they do the open scoring and they'll flash it up. So, like I said, not necessarily the judge, the name as in the score, just
the scores whether themselves.
All the scores themselves. People on the back, you know, if it's a 5-round fight and you're 3 rounds up, why do I have to go? I could coast, could alter there for that. That's all the obvious things. Here's another thing for you. You're a fighter, okay? You're fighting again. You've gone out, you've had the first round, or whatever round it is, and there's another round to go or 2 rounds to go, whatever. You could have had the round of the year. You know, the round of the century, you put your heart and soul into this round. Two guys trying to take each other's heads off. And you've come back and you've sat on the stool and then they'll flash up the score and your corner's there and you've lost the round. What about that adversely affecting you? What about if that mate, what the fuck? Why are we not?
You feel like you're battling the judges.
Why are we not caring for your concentration on a fight? What if you come out and you start doing wild things and people go, oh yeah. Well, fuck the fans for a minute.
Yeah.
You think about wildly entertaining you. What about me, my health, my career, my livelihood? The psychology of adversely affecting a fighter in a dangerous manner. Mm-hmm. That's something that people don't think is being reasoned with or articulated. And it's not thought of either. Mm-hmm. People are always on about, got to appease the fans, they got to know. Forget the fans for a minute. Forget the fans. But I'm talking about with the scoring, you know? And people say about, why is fighting the only sport where, obviously in other sports, football, you know, that's a live score. You put the ball in the net, it's a goal, it's 1-0. You hit the ball over the boundary, it's 4 runs. You know, people know the score. And with fight, like I said, because there's a certain, fighting's different. There's a psychology attached to it. Plus the betting is a huge one too. People bet on round by round now. So if a guy was there and, oh, I think I'm going to take my foot off the gas, I'm not going to win this round, et cetera, et cetera.
Open scoring makes sense for a sport that's guaranteed to go the distance. Like, you know that football is going to go 90 minutes. So it's who can score as many goals in that amount of time. MMA is not necessarily going to go the distance. The problem with having open scoring is
great point.
It circles back to going, okay, you've won that round, instead of win the fight. Like, the whole the whole onus should be on the fighter trying to stop the fighter that they're against.
Mm-hmm.
And open scoring, I think, gravitates away from that a little bit.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of it.
No.
And I don't think I could be a fan of it. I'd need to see something extraordinarily, you know, in favour of, I'd need to see it trialled in so many different ways. Like I said, that people talking about, what if the guy took his foot off the gas? Forget that for a minute. That's the easy things to see. Mm. What about adversely affecting the psychology of a fighter in the midst of a world championship fight?
Yeah.
Because what, bloodthirsty fans want to see him go gung-ho for a finish, and then he gets brutally knocked out, and he never gets a title fight again,
mm-hmm.
because he thought he was adversely affected, but... That's not fair.
Yeah.
What about the judges? Okay, you may not. Judging is a stressful situation. What if they flash the scores up? You've got 50,000 people in attendance fucking booing, losing their shit. What if the judge starts thinking, oh, God, I've got to do something to make this up, then gives a completely fictitious score in the next round? What if that happens, you know? The psychological reasoning behind open scoring, it's... For fighting, there's something... just different, the psychology, that you know, it's primal, and it's just, I think that, like I said, brass tacks for me, solid foundation building blocks. Give me, we don't need to change it. Do we need to get better every single day? Continual improvement. Me as a referee, when I said, I never use the word perfection, but I'm always going to try and be. I'll always give you what I've got, and I'll try and be perfect. Even though I know I never will be. Perfection for me does not exist, but I'm always trying to be.
I'm offended, Mark.
Perfection for me doesn't exist, but I'm always trying to be, and that's what keeps me one step ahead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we should be looking at, you know, like I said, my basic analogy, the car's not broke.
Yeah.
It's how you're driving it. And like I said, we might do little modifications. You like that, don't you?
I do like it, yeah.
We might have little modifications to tweak. And like I said, modifications are, let's review this in the criteria. Let's review, what if we gave this? That's great to be, you know, discussed. And people say, like, another classic case in point, you know, the misconceptions. You know, to be the champ, you got to beat the champ. Yeah, no shit. Over 5 rounds of fighting, a champion doesn't get any more significance or weight or bearing on a fight just because he's the champ.
Mm-hmm.
Fallacy. Hometown judging.
Yeah, got to beat fucking, the champ to take the belt.
Yeah, the three judges are not even from the country. Another fallacy. Take him down, you win the round. Another fallacy. There's so many, like I said, misconception. That's the way I articulated it. Misconception. Dogs are sport in milestone fashion. That's where the real emphasis needs to go. That's where we really need to dig down and concentrate. And like I said, not saying there isn't a problem. You know, we're human beings. We will get, but by percentage, by value, if we put the right people in the right places at the right time, statistically, we got a greater chance of getting it right.
Mm-hmm.
Andy Foster said a great thing, and it's true. You know, judging's better than it was 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and it'll be better in 5, 10, 20 years from now.
Yeah.
That's evolution.
Yeah,
and it's gonna happen. Stick with us.
How much is fight experience a value for a judge? Do you think
another fallacy? People going about, and I'll use my own journey. Fighters make the best. We gotta have X fight. No. The qualities. I'm not. There could be some fantastic fighters who retire and can add. Could be, but there could also be some horrendous ones.
Mm-hmm.
The qualities that you possess are within you, you know? Can you articulate? Can you reason? Do you understand? And like they said, there's some fighters out there. They'd be the last person I'd want to referee a match. You understand?
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're laughing because you can think of some.
For sure.
It's not saying, yes, it would. People go, do you have to have been a fighter to be a judge? No.
Mm-hmm.
It stood me in good stead, but I wasn't a world-class fighter.
Yeah.
I wanted to be, but I wasn't.
I'd like an easier transition for fighters coming to the end of their career to move into refereeing and judging and anything else around the sport that they can do. I mean, obviously coaching's the obvious one, but for my own personal mind, I would be more comfortable if I was a fighter going into an octagon knowing that I've got 3 former fighters judging based on them.
Bad idea, Dan.
But I'm only saying based on them compared to some of the judges that we've got now.
I can't support that, my friend.
That's all right. We don't have to agree.
Of course. Yeah. It's okay
to
disagree.
Like the UK judges, like the guys you've mentioned, you know, Cartledge and Leatherby, and like they're amazing.
They've never had a fight in their life.
No, exactly.
Never.
No, that's
not one fight between them.
I'm not saying a judge has to have a fight. If they were judging, I would have no problem. I would rather them than other fighters because I know that
they're... Hold that thought.
Okay.
Let's go back. And you're the guy for... You said you'd be comfortable with fighters. Mm-hmm. That's what you said. Mm-hmm. You'd be more comfortable with fighters.
Yeah.
So you're stepping in. You don't know them from Adam. Mm-hmm. We do now. But let's say you didn't know them from Adam. And then I tell you before, Dan, these guys, they've never fought. Would that adversely affect you? Or would you be more inclined to... Would you not think about it at all? Would you be more inclined
If I had no point of reference between the three judges that didn't fight and the three judges that had,
yeah.
I'd rather the three that had. For different reasons, though. One is that they know the sport as a sport in itself, whereas the judges are generally, in my experience, coming from kickboxing, judo,
a single discipline.
Boxing. Exactly. So I feel like the Andre Ewell fight, I feel like whoever was scoring three rounds to him was only really focusing on the hands, didn't focus on the body kicks, the low kicks, those kind of things. So yeah. Just kind of, and I think it's subconscious. I know I subconsciously watch a fight weighing the striking heavier. I know I do, because that's what I want to see. That's what my discipline was. That's what I see as being more effective in a fight than anything else. That's the way that that's my interpretation.
Yeah.
But I also understand the other elements of the sport enough to give them credit when they're needed. I don't have the confidence in some of the judges that haven't fought at the moment compared to some of the judges that have. I like a judge that has, I at least know. And the other thing as well, he's giving somebody a fair shout. Dusty Fuck that I was talking about was due to judge me on one of my fights and had made a judgment on me before I'd even stepped into the octagon. He'd never met me. And he said that I didn't deserve to win the fight because I was a thug. And he's still judging now. And he's a Dusty Fuck.
Say that one again. So, a fight in the UFC.
Yep.
So
I say what fight it was, didn't I? I said it was the GSP fight. It was before my world title fight.
He went on record.
No, he told Eddie Bravo because he didn't know Eddie Bravo was training with me.
Ah, okay.
And he said to Eddie that I don't deserve to win because I'm just a thug. That was
before the fight.
Was 2-3 weeks before the GSP.
And that's fact.
Fight. Fact.
Wow. Okay. Now look, hold that in isolation. Right. I don't know who you're talking about, and let's not mention it here.
You might be surprised when I tell you.
Okay. Tell me off air. But what I'm saying here is this comes back to the point there when you're talking about this is why people like that should never be anywhere near a microphone.
No.
Not as to say, you know, he's going to butt.
I think they should. Put that motherfucker in front of a microphone.
Yeah, he's going to say that,
himself.
Is he?
Let him hang himself. He won't say that. But if you put a microphone in front... I've got a microphone in front of my face fucking half of the day. I say enough stupid shit because if you talk enough, you say something stupid. If you put something, if you get one of those judges or one of those referees that we feel has made a bad call, and we put that person at the press conference with a microphone in front of them, we're going to understand that person. We're going to know whether they know what they're watching and whether they're making a fair call on those fighters. A fighter that's fought before, even if they don't know me, and they prefer wrestling, jiu-jitsu, and I'm not very good at either of those things, I still feel they would look at
still?
Me.
Still? Are you still saying that about yourself?
I'm still not very good at those things. I still feel they would look at me and give me a fair shout because they know what I'm sacrificing. That judge that I'm talking about had no concern for what I'd sacrificed to get myself to that position.
Is this judge you're talking about still active?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I don't think he's still alive, but he's still active. That's a joke. he looks like Mr. Dead when he's sitting octagon side.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway. But it's just the thing is, and that's worse than open scoring, because then I'm going into a fight against the best fighter in the world in my weight class, arguably in all the weight classes, and I've got one of the judges already voted against me.
People say that the classic case for me is like people know that I had a run in with Connor, mm-hmm. for instance. Mm-hmm. You know me,
yeah.
In that I still have no malice, nothing. In that. I would referee Conor McGregor tonight with the same impartiality and integrity that...
I said this on the podcast. You'd do the same thing with one of your kids. You'd be completely impartial because that's your role that you play, and that's why you're so good at it. And me sitting in a judge's seat, it doesn't matter who it is that's fighting. It could be Josh Koscheck against somebody else. I'm still going to judge it as a fair fight. Because even if I don't like a person's characteristic, I understand what it's taken to get in there.
Marcus Davis versus Josh Koscheck. What would you do,
Davis, then? Davis all day of the week, fuck Koscheck. No, I would still... You'll watch it objectively.
Have you ever spoke to Marcus post that?
Marcus, when...
Did you ever see him in like... Because I know, obviously, I mean, I ref the fight.
Yeah.
And I know why they got me to ref the fight. Yeah, I've been refing the needle fights for a while.
Yeah, it was aggro.
I always got on with, because it was weird, because up until that point, I think I'd ref Marcus a few times in UFC. Mm-hmm. He'd never lost.
Yes.
So I think when, because you were decision, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You beat Marcus decision. Mm-hmm. That was the first time. And
that was a split decision. And that's a good point of one referee seeing the fight differently. One judge seeing the fight differently to the other two.
Yeah.
Because the judge that was behind me didn't see my leg get caught and as I fell over and thought it was a knockdown, so they scored that last round for him.
Because he thought you were knocked down.
Yeah.
And that's plausible, right? Yeah, yeah. And yeah. I know you're saying, but like, that's where, that's on paper go, but yeah, dude, it could have cost me the fight, but it didn't cost you the fight. Mm-hmm. And the same with, obviously, with, what was I talking about? Oh, yeah, obviously, going back to the Colby Covington fight, you know, factually, obviously, the scorecards, I don't know what they are, and the time of the fight, and it means nothing to me. Mm-hmm. But even going back and look, let's say, you know, coulda, woulda, shoulda, had I let the fight play out, Colby was still leaving with the belt anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, that's facts.
Yeah.
That's facts.
Usman.
Sorry?
Usman.
Excuse me, sorry.
Yeah.
Usman was still, Freudian slip, Kamaru was still going to leave with the belt anyway.
Yes. Yeah, it wouldn't have made
at much worst, sense. It would have been a majority decision. Mm-hmm. That second round, that fifth round would have gone to a 10-8.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. But I don't know any of this and I don't care about this, and that has no bearing on my significance. But I'm just, and like I said, I think it was a good discussion we had on the mechanics of why I do what I do, mm-hmm, and what I'm faced to present with.
Yeah.
Last it, mate. People have no idea how personal I take it. Personal as in from a heart perspective. Well, if I see a fighter upset at the end of it, I've been there. I didn't fight at world championship level in the UFC, but I've been there on both sides of the coin. I know what it's like to win. I know what it's like to lose. I know what it's like to put everything you got, the psychology, everything. It's bizarre, man. Mm.
Yeah. So that supports my point that former fighters would be good judges.
Yeah, some could, but but you'd agree they'd have to go through the same process.
Sure.
No, like I said with Stephen A. Smith.
Yeah. Well, I learned so much from your judging and refereeing course, and that had 30 thank you fights.
Yeah, you're a very, you know, experienced, I mean, fighter.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's the same as Stephen A. Smith. It's not an automatic rite of passage. Mm-hmm. Stephen A. Smith's been a commentator for, what, 20-odd years or whatever? Does that mean he can commentate or give his a valued opinion on MMA? Clearly not. Mm-hmm. The same for a fighter. Yeah, I fought that. And the reason I will hammer it home to you, go around and ask how many fighters, current, active, and former, and this is their livelihood, it's what they do. Ask them or their coaches, sit down and talk to me about the criteria. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't be able to tell you.
Yeah, no.
Some can, but most can't. They can't tell you, and they'll use the thing, I don't know what these judges are looking for. Well, let me tell you, they're looking for the same thing. They're looking for the same thing, buddy.
Yeah.
When you're at that lot, you know, when Andy Foster said, the Sals, the Derricks, the Christie, etc. There's a reason why they'll use the same officials for the high level fights, because it's, and then, you know, we are humans, we are, but statistically, you know, it was a good analogy. Andy's saying, are you going to want the surgeon who's performed the same operation 400 times and successfully completed it 396, or someone who's done it 10 times and completed it 6 or 7?
Yeah.
I don't know.
For sure.
But the new blood keep coming through. Don't talk to me about, I do my thing, you know, I do my best to bring through the new blood, carrying out officials with the work we do with IMAF. I'm immersed and submerged in this sport to do what I can to build and help. And when I speak publicly, it's because I'm not out, like I said, if I was out there being completely and utterly unprofessional, inappropriate, bringing the sport into disrepute, I'm a champion and advocate for this sport.
Yeah.
I know how to carry it forward and I know how to articulate it and speak it. I want the best. I know I want the best for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Every fighter that steps in, regardless of who you are. I would referee Colby Covington tomorrow. You don't want that? Whatever. No harm done. I would do it right now. Colby Covington versus Conor or whatever it may be. You know, because you know me. It would get the same impartiality and integrity.
It would.
But there's more positive to the way more positive things. What was that thingy soup? Agro soup.
Agro soup.
Yeah.
No more agro soup.
No more agro soup. Just don't eat. Just don't eat loud crunchy food next to me.
Get some Ravi Shankar on. That will chill you right out. All good. Great catching up with you, mate. Really
awesome,
good.
Mate.
Let's
thank you.
Too long next time. Good talking. Thank you for listening. See you next time.